Greetings, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Dreamscapes. Today we have our friend Thomas Worm from Olympia, Washington. He is the author of Seven Ways to Medicine, available on Amazon, link in the description. He is a master practitioner of hypnosis and mental and emotional release. Can't read my own handwriting. We're going to get right back to him in 2 seconds. Would you kindly like, share, subscribe, tell your friends. Always need more volunteer dreamers, viewers for the video game streams, etc. 17 currently available works of historical dream literature. The most recent, The Fabric of Dreams by Catherine Taylor Craig, lovingly reproduced, recreated, and enhanced, if I may say so myself, by yours truly, your friendly neighborhood dream wizard. Also, you can find all this and more at BenjaminTheDreamWizard.com, including downloadable MP3 versions of this very podcast. You can listen live or take them with you on the go. There's always one more thing. Head on over to BenjaminTheDreamWizard.locals.com, trying to build a community there. That's where I would like to source most dreamers in the future. You know, become a fan and get your opportunity to talk to me. Let's share our dreams with each other. That's enough about me. Back to our guest. Thomas, thank you for being here. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for this.
First thing I said when you popped on the screen was, I love that psychedelic mandala back there. That's fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, it's an amazing piece of artwork that I got from Nepal that just really, it's got a lot of energy, you know?
Absolutely. So it certainly drew my eye. And I think it also, you know, what's in the environment speaks to the person. Like, how do you live? And for you, this is, you know, I assume it says something about your spiritual practice, or how would you characterize it?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think for me, my own spiritual practice really comes down to meditation and Qigong and more Native American style beliefs and paganism and elements and ritual and ceremony. So magic, of course, you know, all the things. So,
yeah, I just tweeted out the other day, and don't follow me on Twitter. I'm a crazy person. I say all kinds of weird stuff. But anyway, I'm trying to conceive, like, what is magic? And I think I've said a lot of things about it. In the past, I've said it's if you imagine the pyramid of knowledge or whatever with the flame at the top, but there's a gap. The flame isn't actually on touching the pyramid. There's a gap, and I'm like, magic is what happens in that gap. It gets from all of the building blocks are there to the end result. Something happens in between. Like, I think of that as magic. Yeah. That's not what I tweeted. That's an example, but I speak in circles, and we'll come back. So what I put out there was, you know, the way I'm trying to conceive of it is that I think of science as the how and religion or spirituality as the why, and where they intersect, that point is magic, that harmony of the right thing at the right time for the right reason, that kind of a thing. I mean, it lines up with the Jungian, like, concepts of synchronicity, etc. I don't know if that idea speaks to you, or if I'm just
rambling
craziness.
I love that, man. And I think to me, it's almost like creating your own synchronicities, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It will, because I'm always trying to conceptualize the history of how we got to where we are. And I try and think long history, broad scale, like before recorded history, like several hundred thousand years before recorded history. So I don't know what your particular spiritual practices are. Some people think specifically God sculpted clay and made humans fully formed as they are today. I think of it more metaphorically. We became human evolutionarily. That's where I'm at on that thing. And there was a time before we were human. What we are now, our ancestors were not human at one point, and then we are human now. So at some point there was that transition. Where am I going with this? Animals have a rudimentary, I'm doing a lot of talking. I should have you talk more. I'm going to go ahead and ramble for a minute. Hopefully not a whole minute, but animals have kind of a rudimentary ability to process cause and effect, but not really like meta level looking at the analysis of cause and effect itself as a process. Like a dog can figure out, I need to turn the stick sideways to get through the door, but they can't say, I should design an experiment according to the scientific method. It's a uniquely human thing. And I think that,
right.
I think that's where magic is. And we went from, I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't see much difference between magic and science. Like they say, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. That's the famous line. And it's that process of understanding. And then it used to be the, you know, what a wizard was, or the concept of it is someone who possesses secret knowledge that other, most people don't. And then it became ubiquitous. We started teaching wizardry, you know, we started teaching science in school. And now, you know, eighth graders know about the, you know, Newton's laws and thermodynamics and different things. And it's like, that's kind of, I don't know. I'm going to stop there. I don't know if you have things to say. I think I could just keep talking forever. Go ahead.
I love it, man. Yeah. I think there's, you know, I guess my spiritual practice really comes from Hawaii. This, my own practice of helping others with mental emotional release and hypnosis, I started to see so much energy and things happening and people connecting to highest self. And so I needed some more structure because I've been very gifted and open to energy my whole life. And so I started going to a magic school in Hawaii and really teaching how to use energy, how to work with the elements. And I think one of the processes of that is like, one of the ideas that comes from that school, which is really from Hermeticism or other, all it's all over the world, but it's that the universe is mental, you know? And I think that gap you're talking about is like, it's the mental process of the mental power of the human being has so much more power than we can understand yet. You know, there's so much, if the universe is mental, we have such a strong mind, like the mind can do anything, is one of my beliefs. It's just a matter of harnessing the focus through meditation or through, you know, really strong focus in your life to get what you want or to affect things. And of course, this is where ethics and being, you know, in Hawaii, we call it pono, like really being right with ourselves to know what we're doing with our mind. It's so important.
That opened a fascinating tangent in my mind too, is I try to be very inclusive in my observation of different traditions of the understanding of dreams. So I'm reviewing all, and most of the books I'm reproducing, recreating are Western, just because that's the ones that have been saved and preserved to so that I could enhance and make them available in a modern edition that, you know, I'll just go ahead and say it. You can find it, look for every one of my book titles. You can find it on some university website. They've got a scan of the old book. They've got a PDF file or whatever you can download. But I try to put it, if you want a physical copy in your hand, you're going to have to get it from me, or there's a couple other versions out there. I think mine's the best, but I'm partial I might have some bias there. But also I think it's true. Where was I going with that? Okay. So, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of those guys also mention other traditions, but it's definitely Western perspective. And specifically in the next book I'm working on, there's an article that is, again, from a Western perspective, but it's trying to tell the story, at least as of the 1850s, the tradition of Muslim dream interpretation. And okay, long story short on that, why am I telling that story? I need to find resources and try to get different, you know, I guess we might say indigenous people's perspectives on that. I spoke to one guy for an interview that, he talked about the his ancestors' tradition of the Dreamtime Aboriginal Australian perspective on that, and then we discussed his dream in light of that spiritual belief, you could say. But also, just in general, I really appreciate the different cultural views on psychology as well. Don't step on my mouse, jeez, these cats, they're gonna kill me. We're still recording, we're good. So you know, it surprised me, and then I thought, why would that surprise me to say, you know, that Hawaiians may have a tradition of spirituality that you then informs psychology, which that connects to what I was saying earlier as well, of like the way we evolved over time is that we created different things like religion and science to help us understand the world. And a lot of it has to do with these spiritual perspectives of like, well, what is this thing? What is the ideal? What's the good? How do we be virtuous in the world? And I'll stop there. There was probably a question I forgot.
Yeah, you know, we have a song and a chant and a process we do called Moi Moi A, which is it's a chant done for to enhance lucid dreaming. And one of the ideas of this is to help you, one, of course, lucid dream, which is to wake up in your dream. Of course, we probably all heard of that from a Western perspective, but the intention is a little bit deeper, and actually with a higher level of practice is actually braiding that dream self and the physical self. And so there's no real difference. And I would say that's definitely happened to me in a dream where I actually merged with my dream self. And so there's so many dreams now that are just either precognitive or that's a lesson for me, or it's like, I don't dream every night, but when I do, it's like, oh wow, I'm like fully interacting here, like a video game. This is so interesting. The dream world is just, it really explores every depth of consciousness. You know, it's everything really. I think the dream world is so important, and I'm just in awe of what you're doing, man, because I think it's so cool. And, you know, we do have our own dream interpretation process, but I think it's probably more of a Carl Jung process that we use. But it's important. You know, the signs and symbols we see in our dreams are so relevant in our waking life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I try to blend in also what is the dreamer's perspective? Like, because mine doesn't matter. It's not my dream. The symbols aren't going to be relevant to me. And that's also one of the reasons I kind of broadly dismiss the dream dictionary approach. One symbol can't mean the same thing to every person in all contexts. It's got to be personal. And it's got to be something that I tell dreamers to, well, I don't always say it, but what I'm looking for is that moment where they go, oh, wait a minute. And then they think of some spontaneous connection forms. And they go, when you said that, it made me think this. And that feels true. That feels right. So there's got to be almost a visceral zing of aha. So I just usually I just ramble until someone has one of those moments and offer the way I describe it. And people might get sick of hearing this, but you invite me into your head, and in the darkness, I'm standing behind your shoulder with a flashlight, going, "What's that over there? What if we look at it from this angle? What do you think about this idea?" And they're all just suggestions. They're just, well, here's what that makes me think of. Here's the different ways we could look at that thing. What do you think? And it's got to be something that makes sense to you. That's why I call it a collaborative process. I mean, I'm not here to have the spirits whisper to me what the truth is. We could conceptualize it as whatever energy I'm tapping into is giving me the inspiration to ask questions or to offer possibilities. But yeah, none of the answers are in me. So what would you say about maybe the Hawaiian traditional concept of dreams? Is that something you feel, you know, at least versed enough in to give a rough sketch?
I think in the Hawaiian perspective, and you know, I'm not Hawaiian. I've just done some studying, right? So let's be clear on that. But sure. I think for me, just from my school's perspective, that dreams are actually, I think the place I want to go is actually, I would say they look at it a lot like the Greeks, where the Greeks in ancient times, they would create these sanctuaries, you know, where you could go into town to the regular doctor and you could get your allopathic kind of type medicine to be healed of something, you know, which is great. Or there is the sanctuaries where you would have to do a pilgrimage up into the mountains and stay with the healers, the seers, the shamans, these people, and you would stay there for so long, like to a point, it could be months, it could be years, but the entire intention of the sanctuary is a dream incubation.
Oh yeah.
So basically that person stays there with this team of healers until they have a dream that heals them. And I think I've had so many experiences like that in my own life, where it's like I wake up from a dream and it's like everything that's been bothering me or everything that's been going on mentally, emotionally, it's like it's settled. The dream is just, it's cleared. And so I think that idea that the dream world and our world is actually there is no difference. It's just a matter of like our own perceptions about it, our own beliefs, our own Western mind trying to grapple with that, as well as maybe more of the Toltec, you know. I would say it's very similar to that, where it's like our life is our dream. So why don't we make it the best dream we can, you know? And I think that's, it's so similar. Like the Hawaiian tradition is very, very ancient. It's like our lineage is, there's 121 generations, so almost 3,000 years in our school. And so it's so interesting how much it ties into all these other traditions around the world. It's really fascinating.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, and that's actually one of my books, book 16, Dreams in Homer and Greek Tragedy, looks at the, you know, antiquarian perspective on those ancient civilizations and how they represented their cultural understanding of dreams in works of art, in that sense. And that's where we get, you know, from, we get some from philosophers, but we get more from the literature and how they say, you know, a vision of Patroclus came to Achilles. And they're like, you know, this is in his dreams. It's vague enough to, because there's like, the Greeks had like 8 words for everything, especially for like love, or seven words or something, you know, different shades of meaning. Fair enough. That's we kind of throw them all into one for simplicity's sake. But then we go, well, what do you mean? Then we have to add words and modify. Well, this is familial love. Why not just say, you know, agape or something? That's not the right connection. But if we had a different word for it, it would be a lot easier to you know, we're gonna add modifiers anyway. We might as well have a separate word. That my opinion, make the English better. I was going somewhere with that. Okay, so we got all those ancient traditions say, and it, to my mind, there is very little distinction. And again, this is the magic context and science and how they kind of work together. We don't know where inspiration comes from. It may as well be magical. It may as well be the muses. Who knows? You know, Cleo inspiring our love of history. You know, sure, why not? Where does love of history come from? Why does that animate or excite someone? We don't know. That's literally magic in my estimate. Okay, long story short on that. The Greeks and it sounds like the Hawaiians looked at it like dreams were, they had different classifications, but one of them was messages from the gods. And what do the gods do? Well, they're above humans. They're the source of certain power and esoteric knowledge. I mean, the gods have access to information that we don't, and that's part of what makes them gods. And they can communicate that to us sometimes. So it's not practically or functionally different to say our psychology processes data and therefore is able to rationally connect the dots and give us an answer in the morning. And that process is dreams, or a god or gods sent us a message, a vision in a particular form to allow us to solve a problem. I mean, in my estimation, what source you believe it comes from is irrelevant to the process and the conclusion. It's pretty much the same. So the idea that if you're Christian, there is a Christian tradition of dream interpretation, of course, in the Bible. And one of my books, this is going to be a book heavy episode. Book two, The Mystery of Dreams, is literally a preacher's sermon from 1658, I want to say, where he talks about how to distinguish divine dreams from delusions of the devil and tell the difference, so his parishioners could wake up in the morning and go, you know, this was a message from God saying to get my act together or praising me for following the right path, versus this is the devil trying to tempt me into sin or make me betray my neighbors or do all manner of bad things. This is my own ego and, you know, sinful nature speaking to me and encouraging me to do sinful things or whatever. So from that perspective, and it very much is, you mentioned, I was going somewhere with all that. I don't know if you have comments. I'm going to stop for just a second. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think I'm ready to do the dream interpretation. I'm getting excited.
Oh yeah. That's, thank you for prompting me. We gotta make sure we don't run out of time here. Where are we at there? 20 minutes in. Or 20:58, I think it was. Yeah, that's a great way to go. All right. So as per my usual process, I just shut up and listen. We get the a dream told as a story, well, whatever you experience beginning to end, and then we'll go back through it again and try and make some sense of it. So I'm ready when you are.
Okay. Right on.
Benjamin the Dream Wizard wants to help you pierce the veil of night and shine the light of understanding upon the mystery of dreams. Every episode of his Dreamscapes program features real dreamers gifted with rare insight into their nocturnal visions. New Dreamscapes episodes appear every week on YouTube, Rumble, Odyssey, and other video hosting platforms, as well as free audiobooks exploring the psychological principles which inform our dream experience, and much, much more. To join the wizard as a guest, reach out across more than a dozen social media platforms and through the contact page at BenjaminTheDreamWizard.com, where you will also find the wizard's growing catalog of historical dream literature available on Amazon, documenting the wisdom and wonder of exploration into the world of dreams over the past 2,000 years. That's Benjamin the Dream Wizard on YouTube and at BenjaminTheDreamWizard.com.
I'm going to recount it, and I have my journal here if I lose something here, but I think, it was like a terrarium kind of, but more like a sun room. You know what I'm talking about? Like a glass ceiling, with plants. There was, people in front of me, like I was getting ready to teach a class. And I'm pretty sure I was in Hawaii, but it, like, you know how it is, it's in dreams. It's like I was in Hawaii, but I wasn't, not really sure. And then I had a team that was helping me, and they were bringing out all these drums, like Native American drums, and setting them out in front of me and between me and the class that I was getting ready to teach. And I had a drum in my hand. And now the really interesting thing is that the drums, each drum had a symbol on it, a symbol, like a magic symbol that brings in energy. We could also look at it as like literally the different gods in Hawaii. So there's all these symbols on each drum, and they're bringing all these drums, and there's 36 drums total. So they're bringing 35, and I have one in my hand. And I'm getting ready to teach something, but then my teacher walks in, the one that teaches in Hawaii, and I just freeze. And I'm like, I can't teach in front of my teacher. Like, this is so uncomfortable. Like, what am I going to, like, I froze up for a minute, but then I just looked at my drum and just started beating the drum and calling in that energy that was on the drum, which is like, I just started playing the drum, bringing in that energy of connecting with higher self. And then the other, like a drum out of the pile that was in front of me would come up in the air and start beating itself. Okay. So one drum is playing itself, and I'm pulling in that energy now. And then another drum is pulling in this energy, and I'm doing it consciously. Like, okay, I want this energy and I want that energy to help me teach this class. And soon enough, like there's, like kind of like a swirl of almost like a, I'm just being surrounded by all these drums that are playing by themselves all around me. I'm calling in all this energy. And it was just like this really powerful moment for me. And then all the drums like integrated into the one drum in my hand. So there's no more drums at all. There's just one in my hand, and I'm playing just one drum. And my teacher looks over at me and is just like, nice, I'm really proud of you. Good job. I think you're ready to teach now. And this was like really, it was a big moment for me in my dream. And it was powerful, and also kind of like, what just happened? I woke up from it after the completion of the dream, and I had to write it all down because it was a big one for me.
Very nice. That is a powerful dream, I would estimate. And I do, if I do say so myself, and I said it. Great imagery too. So let me go back. Whoop. Let me lose my pen. Here we go. I write so fast and I get hand cramps and then I can't hold the pen. It flies off.
I know. Right?
Flies off into my lap.
Yeah.
Okay. So we got page two. We've got, okay. So there's a lot of ways I've done this before. And in the past, it's been primarily what I'm most comfortable with, what seems most intuitive to me is just going through it in order, line by line, to help me see it through your eyes better. Describe what's happening. I think you gave pretty good descriptions. Yeah. So something I've been trying to incorporate is a little more structure. I'm always trying to organize things. And it sounds like, you know, so I'm playing one drum and I'm trying to use my other drums and bring them together in a way that, you know, makes me ready to teach. As you say, this is fantastic. I think I know where this is going and it's great. Okay. So long story short on that, I'm trying to incorporate it and I'm still working through this. This is why I'm trying to verbalize my process as well. So I think where I want to start this time is the idea of enumerating some things, and you literally enumerated the drums. There's 36. Location. Let me start there. So, it is a physical, so you're not in an actual terrarium, like a sealed bottle. I think that's what they call them, right?
Yeah. No, not quite. It's more like,
you said like a sunroom,
more like a sunroom and like a, gosh, it almost felt like, you know, like how a sauna has like wooden deck everywhere. You know what I mean? It's like, there's like soil on the ground, like sand, and then like wooden walls, and then like a glass ceiling, and there's lots of plants. It was definitely a building.
Okay. So we're gonna come back to that. That's what I'm doing here. And the so we've got the location. And what we do, I don't know whether to divide objects and people. So we'll say people are objects in a way. There's definitely, you said there's, you know, 36 drums related to Hawaiian gods. There was one you. And sometimes you quote unquote do not appear in dreams. So I never had a sense of myself. I'm watching something else happen, but you are definitely present and you are you. One teacher, any sense of the size of the audience? What are you doing?
I feel like 12 is coming up.
Okay. Question mark. That's okay. And that's a fair estimate. So it's like, it could have been literally one person and you're like, whoa, I never thought of that. There was just one person there. Counterfactuals. Okay. What is it not comparatively? It could have been an auditorium,
right?
Huge, but this is around a dozen people. So it's large enough to be significant, but small enough to be intimate in a way. So kind of thinking of that, like this is a small group setting versus I was on stage in front of 50,000 people at the Super Bowl or whatever. Very, right. Very, very different type of concept. Any other objects in the space that stand out? You know, so far we've only done people. Let's those enumerating those objects. What are you doing? You want to come here?
Let's see. It's
come here, boo boo.
I think the as I'm looking over my notes and there's one thing I missed here.
Sure.
One of the drums, actually the symbol, it was number 12 is the number associated with it.
Mm.
It was drawn wrong. Like the painting was wrong. So I had to keep like, I had to adjust it in my mind. Like, no, that's not the right symbol. It's not the right symbol. Like, and so I had to just keep drawing it. And it's interesting because it's number 12. number keeps coming up, I guess.
Does that symbol
eventually
go ahead?
Eventually I fixed it, and then I could move on to the next drum, but it was like I had to fix that symbol, and it was almost like you've been, as we draw these symbols for healing work, and so it's almost like, oh, you've been drawing this symbol really like lazy, like you need to work on this symbol specifically, like on drawing it right in your mind. And so once I fixed it, I kept moving on.
Okay,
that's the only thing that, like, that's the one object that really stands out to me.
Okay. Is that symbol associated with a specific Hawaiian god? Which one?
Yes. Kahanu Ala, which is more, it's like, it like brings energy, like light into your breath and into your lungs. So it connects your breath with more light, and it really works with, healing property is definitely more like sadness and grief, and is associated in the lungs.
Okay, making notes here. All right, that's interesting. Cool. I suppose just one more check of any other objects that stand out in the environment, anything. Doesn't have to be just trying to just covering the bases. It could have been something you saw on the wall or through the ceiling. I mean, I assume it's daytime. Lots of sunlight, or indeterminate, weren't sure of a light source. That's common too.
Could see through the ceiling, and it was like blue sky.
Okay.
And say the other thing that stands out is that my teacher that was there, like he wasn't physically there, where like all the other people were there physically. He was more like there in spirit watching me. It's different. I realized that. Yeah,
gotcha. Very cool. And any sense of yourself in terms of physical appearance? Yeah. Or not behaviors, we know those, but
I think, like, all I could see in the dream was just, like, my hands, so it was very, like, associated, but I would say I'm connecting with it. I feel like there's more, like, I'm wearing all white, like, ceremony, something I would wear for ceremony.
Okay. That's interesting, too. So, ceremonial... white, lots of this leaning into spiritual practice. I mean, it's definitely drums of the gods and symbols and white ceremonial robe. And, I don't know if it's a robe or not. Robe popped into my head. That's not my, that's not your statement. White ceremonial dress, we'll say, quote unquote. Okay. That's probably pretty good for objects. And then we've got the idea of, behaviors, what, you know, or actions, what happened in the dream. The first one, and it's weird to classify this as a behavior, not under, say, location, but the idea of you, where you are in the room, you are at the position of a teacher. You're in front of the class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, with the counterfactuals, it would be different to say I was standing in the back of the class and the stage was empty and I knew I was expected to be there, but I wasn't. That's a different type of experience. You're definitely, you're putting yourself in a specific location, behaviorally in the dream. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. I go on intuition. So am I even classifying this stuff correctly? Who knows? That's what's happening this time. We'll see.
Yeah. It's almost as if I'm like, it's a smaller space. So it's almost the size of a classroom, but it's like, it's like I'm almost against a wall, you know what I mean? Like one side of the room and the class on the other side. So it's not this just huge room, if that helps.
Okay. Yeah. Not only is it a more intimate crowd, it's a more intimate space. It's a small group setting as well. One thing I forgot before we move out, completely spaced my mind, you said you had a team there. So there were other people.
That's right. And I think
ish.
Yeah. And there's not any faces or specific people I can see. It was just, I don't know, I had two or three helpers. That's all I got.
And this is whatever I do, if it bears fruit, it was the right thing to do. So that just asking about getting into behaviors, like, well, what else happened? Okay, so people were there helping you. I remember that. So you've got you as the dreamer in front of the class. We've got helpers handing you drums, preparing the drums. Well, how would you describe their behavior again? What was their role?
They were putting the drums out between me and the class, like in an arrangement, like almost, it was in rows of 12. So it was three rows of 12. Actually, one was missing because there was one in my hand. So there's two rows of 12 and one row of 11.
Interesting. So that's an interesting thing that came to us because we're trying to describe behaviorally what's happening. So would you say you saw that process happen? Like you appear in the dream, then that process happens, then you move on to experiencing other aspects? Or is it more of a, the drums were there and I know they were placed there by helpers, like some like a knowledge of past events, but that's what you see in front of you?
Yeah, so I'm there with my drum and then I ask my helpers to bring them out and they're working, they're putting them out in front of me in rows. And as that happening, my teacher shows up. So the teacher kind of feeling uncomfortable process and them setting up the drums, that's all happening at the same time.
Okay. And then if we're still going kind of chronologically on that, and let me repeat it again. So we've got behaviorally, in a sense, you appear or place yourself in front of the class. Helpers come and distribute drums, and those drums are between you and the audience, class, learners, students. As that's happening, the spirit of your teacher becomes present, or you become aware of their presence. And then following on that awareness is when you had the moment of thinking, I can't do this in front of my teacher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, yeah. Like not can't, but it's just like,
I was going to ask
watching,
about that
like
phrasing.
This.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like more like, it was a surprise and like, oh, I wasn't planning on that. So I froze for a moment.
Okay. And then what was it like going from frozen to playing the drum that was already in your hands? That's the other thing. Oh, yeah, no, you mentioned that one drum in my hands. You did mention it. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. And it was more like, okay, I'm frozen, but I literally have these 36 tools in front of me. Like, which ones do I need right now to break this frozen feeling? So I started using the energies. Break that feeling up.
And you'd mentioned drum number 12 had been drawn wrong. Was that the one that was in your hands?
No, I had my hand was number 30. Which really, it basically, the energy is F. As if you're connecting the unconscious to the conscious mind to open a channel up to highest self. So that was the first energy I started working with.
Interesting. That's a good one. That's a good one to start with. And we're running out of room on this page. And the cat's on it. Of course he is. They got it. What if I put a decoy over here? Go lay on that. No, he's too smart for me. He gets right back on there. Go lay on this one. It's okay. All right, where were we at here? Well, actually, I need that note too. That's my notes. You trying to get down? Okay. And which drum from the pile, or from, I wrote pile, that's their rows, because I wrote pile, it just came out of my head that way. Which drum from the rows arose to float towards you?
That the first one was, I'll speak to each one, but as I'm looking, it's like a number 1, 8, 12, and then 23. So number 1 is like in the feminine aspect of God to be present, so we can practice forgiveness, like with ourselves or other people, or like make things right. Then I think I said, number 8 is like revealing secrets, or like opening up communication. That could be between people, even electronic devices, or communication from God even. And then 12, we talked about that one a little bit. It's like a light, bringing more energy to your breath. And we didn't mention it. It can really open up the throat, like the throat chakra. So like speaking your truth. And then 23, really, it's a fire element, like it's fire energy that really raises the vibration and connects you to highest self, but also it's really good at like burning negative emotions, or you know, we call, I guess the best term I can think of is baggage. Burns baggage, but it also connects you to your highest self. And so then it was, I can't remember after that, that was the most sequence, but it was slowly, you know, from there, all of them started coming in. But that's like, I remember being very intentional about that sequence because my teacher was there, like, oh, how do I break this feeling? This is the energy I need to like move.
Yeah. And I'm writing down what I recall as your description of it, that, you know, starts with these four, say, and the one that's in your hands, and they all kind of come and merge into that drum. They, one by one, they float in, and
it's almost as if they're, as soon as they start rising and beating by themselves, it's like they're coming near me and they're like in my space, like they're floating around me, like what's the best image? It's almost like a tornado, but it's very gentle. It's like an air current that's circling around me. So by the end of it, they're all circling around me like a tornado, but very gently. Then they come into the one drum.
Okay. Where are we at? It's here. You had a sensation, I think maybe you already covered this, but when you were talking about the ones that came first, that was the sense of calling upon specific ones consciously, like this one first, then this one. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, like I was definitely like awake in the dream at that point, like, oh shit, my teacher's here, you know, like I gotta, what do I do, you know? So that was very conscious, yeah.
For sure. And then the last behavior or action in the dream was the teacher, what I wrote down, and you can correct it or expand on it, saying, good job, you're ready to teach now. Like you felt the sense of those, you didn't hear the word spoken necessarily, but you got that impression that was a message intentionally communicated.
Yeah, it was like an eye contact, yeah, like a eye contact, and that message was maybe more telepathic than spoken.
Okay. I think of the meme, you know, the Robert Redford meme, Mountain Man, and he turns, looks over his shoulder and smiles and nods. That comes into my mind.
Right. Yeah.
You're on the
exactly.
That's
exactly.
Right. You're doing well. Here he is again in all my notes. I am going to need my notes because so what I'm getting from this, what makes sense to me, and this is where I do the suggestions portion. Where are we going with it? What's the narrative? What's the story arc we got going on here? I think you are having a look at yourself and your bag of tricks, your tools of the trade, your competence in a way, and performing a kind of a self-assessment. You're like, what if I try to share what I know? And there's a fine balance between confidence and arrogance. And we're always trying to balance that line. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to, if we do what was like a Fort Johari window type of thing, there's people who are, so we put, you know, competence and actual competence, and then the way we feel about ourselves. So you can be, what is it? I should probably write it down as a grid, but I'm trying to see it in my head. You can have a realistic self-appraisal or an unrealistic self-appraisal. And that would be, you know, what you are actually capable of either is or is not aligned with the actual level of skill you have. So, and it's very common that we second guess ourselves sometimes and say, am I really up to this task? Am I really ready to do what I'm trying to do? And it seems like, you know, you're writing books and you're probably doing some classes or public speaking. You actually do classes or public speaking or things like that?
I do a lot of podcast guesting and, yes, I'm actually starting some more community type classes that I'm teaching and, do a lot of client work. You know, that's probably my main thing is doing a lot of client work. So
you said you're starting community classes. Did this dream happen to coincide with planning to make that happen or the onset of that actually happening?
I mean, it's not too far off. Yeah. I mean, within a couple of weeks, it kind of like fell into place, with a yoga studio in Portland actually. So yeah, maybe. Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. So I would expect, like, especially if you're starting a new venture in that type of way, you're going to have concerns about screwing it up. If you're not a narcissist, you're going to wonder, how do I make this work? I mean, I think I've got my ducks in a row. I think I know what I'm talking about, but am I really sure? So that's where I'm going with this. This is kind of like let's just pause a moment and reflect on where I truly believe I'm at. And I mean, I think the ultimate answer at the end of the dream, the way you answered yourself was, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. And I think my teacher would agree. And that's kind of he was there in spirit and not physically, but he could have easily been there physically because it's all imaginary. which doesn't mean not real. It's a very realistic image of whatever we were thinking, of course. Okay, so going through the process is like how do we analyze our competence? We have to get a realistic appraisal of the tools we've acquired and how good we think they are, but also our teacher and their seeking their approval, you know, because that's the person we looked up to as a knowledgeable expert. So if they say we've got it, we're golden. So I think you put him there, and you put him there to observe the process. And that is creating, you've created in your mind a judge, the representation of a judge to say, you know, if I'm not up to this, he's going to tell me, he's going to say, that's not what I taught you. That's not how you do this properly. But you got to the end and you said, you know, I displayed my competence and a person whose opinion I respect gave me the okay, said you're doing fine, don't worry about it. But you also, so you took yourself, this is, I'm just rambling, if any of this, if you have your own thoughts, please jump in. If you disagree with anything I say, please say, I don't think that's it, wait. So this is what I'm seeing as you're describing it and yourself and your process. So you imagine, of course, well, I'm going to be teaching some classes. I'm going to be in front of the class, and you put yourself in this, in a very beautiful and there's soil or sand. There's an earth-like connection, and there's light the building itself is open to receiving light, and that it seems like light and healing energy and growth, plant life feature very heavily too. So these are all the, you know, like I've got these, there's a lot of ways to imagine those symbols as well. It features heavily in, say, a spiritual practice of connecting. You know, we don't connect spiritually to things that are decaying and dead and, you know, disease and things like that. That's like focusing in the wrong energy. So we go, you know, light and growth and earth, generative earth imagery. So it's the ideal conditions for something to thrive and grow in this sunroom terrarium style place. That's number one. So you're like, okay, let's say I've got the ideal conditions. The only element, the only variable is a scientific style. You're isolating variables. The variable is me. If I can make use of the environment and the tools and connect with the people, then I will succeed in the process. And so you imagine yourself going through this process, like, wait, I'm in front of the class. What do we do? Well, I've got, and it's interesting, you've got helpers. You didn't build the drums yourself. You didn't invent the symbols. You didn't come up with these concepts. They have been passed along to you from other people. You've been helped. You've been provided help in the process of getting to the point where you can share these ideas with people. So you've got helpers bringing in the drums. You've got other people that, you know, guided you or facilitated your own learning experience and put these tools literally in front of you. And it's interesting that it's between, they're not behind you. They're not off the side of the stage. These tools are between you and the audience. It's like, what you're going to do is speak to the audience through these tools, conceptual things. And actually you do that. You don't give a lecture. You play the drum. You play the, and each drum is a different symbol. So what you're doing is playing the, you know, the song of my people. You're playing the rhythm of that specific concept, and you've got it broken down by these different fantastic concepts. Which one do you have in your hand? I can't even remember. I wrote it down somewhere. You had in your hands number 30. So where do you begin your process? It's like, okay, the first thing I need to do is connect my conscious and my unconscious. I need to tap into what's already here and bring it out into my consciousness so I can then share it with others. Like if it's hidden inside you, you can't get it out. No one else can see it or access it. You've got to first, you've got to grab it and bring it forward. So you connect to your, And you focus yourself and you say this is both a, you know, it's connecting the conscious and the unconscious, but for the purpose of reaching the highest self. So what do you want to do in a teaching situation? You want to bring your best game to facilitate the understanding of the audience to the greatest degree possible. So you're like, I need to, you know, it's like the concept of, I need to bring my A game to this encounter, to this experience. And you're going to have to move, kitty. I'm so sorry. There you go. I should look here. Let me tear this off. You can have the pad back. I wonder how much they help me with my random ramblings sometimes. Let me stop there and see if everything I've said so far connects with you. I've said a lot, and I'm trying not to lose my train of thought. That's why I'm kind of rambling. No, he's going to land all these papers. Stop it. Go ahead. Did you have any response to that so far?
Stop. Yeah, I think a lot of the things you're saying are definitely a really, really good perspective. Especially what I'm loving about this is like you don't know anything about my school or my teacher or about, you know, the Hawaiian tradition. Like you know, it's like a totally independent idea on this, which is so beautiful. And I think the thing that's really sticking out to me is like the creating a judge. Like, that's really interesting. I think I've definitely, in the beginning, my teacher was like on this pedestal, you know, and I think we do that a lot. A teacher is like a god, right? But it's like, as we get to know our teachers, they become, no, they're on the same level as us. And my teacher always says that, you know, like, no, we're on the same level. It's the same foundation. Like, we're the same. But it took me some years to like see him as equal, to see him as the same as a human being, right?
Yeah.
And so I think there's that healing in this dream of like of completing that judge or that, you know, I think there is like what's coming up for me is like there's like a little bit of fear of judgment from him, right? Like seeking that approval, like you said, that was really
nice.
Yeah, I think there's that that nod and final like you're ready for this was like, I think that was like that sealed the deal. Like, okay.
Yeah. And that's your own self-assessment. You could have had him shaking his head like, I missed something. Fuck. What is it? But you know, so you're imagining he would say, you're ready for this. You know, this is good. Go for it. There's interesting concepts there too. Like, we want to hold our mentors on a bit of a pedestal because they are above us, you know, and it's like, it's the difference between, you know, you're not stupid, you're ignorant. And a lot of people think of ignorant as stupid. And no, it's just things you don't know. I am 110% ignorant of open heart surgery. Do not put a scalpel in my hands. He's not going to live. So there's nothing wrong. It doesn't mean, right, I'm stupid. I'm ignorant of open heart surgery. Fair enough. So when we go into a class-like situation, the teacher is above us until we catch up to their level of knowledge. When they've taught us everything they can, then we get that whole student surpasses the master, because eventually the master stops practicing, retires, dies, and then we are left to carry on the traditions. And sometimes we think of new things they didn't, because they've thought of everything they could up to a certain point in life, and that's as far as they can go. And then we stand on the shoulders of giants, so we surpass them. That's kind of the ideal. Every teacher should want their students to surpass them if possible. Like, again, if they're not that narcissist who's just teaching people because they like the eyeballs and attention.
Right.
Absolutely. So more about your process and how you're conceptualizing this. I think, as I say, this, none of this is me. You got to tell me if I'm right. So you actually go through a very deliberate process of checking your own process. Like, you're going to, okay, let's, I don't know if you're a very like organized or systematic thinker in terms of like, you try and plan things out. Fair enough. I think that's what this, me too. Hello. I see myself here. So the very first thing is you say, okay, let's orient myself properly. I want to do a good job. I want to reach my highest, best self, connect the conscious to the unconscious, pull out the information and abilities I know are within me, and put them to the test. Let's engage the tools that I have. That's number one. Then the drums float up to you. You summon them. You have this feeling of calling for them in a specific order, which we do that. I think we do that in our heads too. And we don't always put it into this imagery. The first one is to say the, okay, well, wait, you realize what drum you're holding. You realize let me back that up. You realize there's a judge, a standard. And okay, that's where I was going with that. You want the approval of a person you respect, not because you're desperate for approval, like, notice me, senpai. That's a bit too far, but it's like, you want the respect of someone that you respect because you have achieved a standard that they, because you respect them and you think they're competent, you want them to see you as equally competent. And so it's not seeking approval necessarily. It's like a validation that you have achieved a commensurate or equal level of competence as the teacher. So, you know, he's there and you're like, okay, it acknowledges an objective standard for doing the process correctly. And we get a lot more feedback in physical stuff. Let's say you're an engineer, you design a bridge. It either spans the gap and stands the flow of traffic, or it does not. If the bridge collapses, you did it wrong. It was built wrong. It was designed wrong. There's less objective standards in touchy-feely, humanity, spooky-woo, spiritual stuff. But you know, you can tell, you know, that being said, psychology is real. You can tell if you're connecting with people, you can tell if, you know, there is a very real and tangible process of, I have an idea, I communicate it, and now you have the idea. That does happen, even if it's intangible completely. Long story short on that. So there's an objective standard, at least, to, you know, and even if there wasn't, in your mind, there is, and that's represented by the teacher. So the first thing, you're like, okay, how do I know, how do I know I'm doing this correctly? What is the standard I'm trying to reach? So then you give your first drum, then you call all of this to get to say, then you call upon the other drums, and the, once you've said, okay, I need to go within and tap into the tools, my bag of tools, I'm going to bring those out and share them. But also I need to be forgiving of myself. You get this feminine aspect of God. You're going to ask the audience to forgive you for any missteps made in good faith. And you're also, I think, saying to forgive yourself for missteps made in good faith. Like, I'm going to do my best, and it may be imperfect, but it's going to be good. It's, and I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to judge myself too harshly. I think this first drum is a response to, understanding that the process will probably be imperfect, and that's okay. And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be perfect to be good. And actually, let me stop there. We'll do one at a time, and you can respond to each one. And then, you know, does that feel right to you?
That's so the interesting idea of, the forgiveness of the people in front of me. I didn't even think about it that way. And it's like, you know, one of the healing processes we do is Ho'oponopono, where we actually, we bring in light in our own bodies, and we put people on a stage and we heal them too. And then we give them, you know, we cut the cords and these kinds of things. So it's so like, oh, like, wow, this is such a different aspect to the classroom, is like, actually forgiveness is the classroom.
Yeah.
That's kind of, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. And in communication too, it's like, if you're going to, and it's different than, this is why I do collaborative interpretation sessions. I don't do debates. I'm not here to change your mind about anything. And I'm not trying to argue with anyone about anything. I don't do verbal. I argue with people on the internet, and I type, I have my own beliefs and different stuff like that, but I'm not really, there's a different energy to that. That's confrontational. That is tactical. Maybe you would say things to embarrass your opponent and to trip them up in words, because the point is to win. It's different with collaboration. The point is to get to a good result, to speak the truth, and to understand that the other person might need some help expressing themselves fully and properly. So there's that, there's more of a, you know, one is a opportunistic attack, and the other is more of, collaborative understanding, the collaborative building of understanding. So yeah, and that's that forgiveness thing of like, you know, if you're in a collaborative communication experience and someone says XYZ and you go, did you mean XYQ? And they would go, oh yeah, I said that wrong. And you forgive. You don't use that as, you know, an opportunity to counter it, to riposte. Long story short on that one, one at a time. And then the next drum that comes up, I wrote down reveal secrets, but also facilitate communication or connection, communication.
Communication. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't read my own handwriting here. So it's very interesting. This is the first moment that you would imagine yourself in the actual process. What I would say is that the first two seem to be internal. Here's what I need to access within me. Here's the mindset I need to bring to it. You know, and then here's the actual communication. Now we're playing the drum of facilitating communication, which could also be preparatory, but it also feels like, and maybe it is, because the one you access next is light, healing, breath, energy, open the throat, because you've got to open the throat to speak. So you're trying to overcome that moment of stage fright and fear of judgment, and saying, you know, so maybe 8 and 12 kind of go together. I don't know what you might say about that.
Yeah, I think so. One's like kind of, it's interesting. The symbol is almost like, you know, those whales that like have the big mouths to eat, like they gulp all the water to get the bait, the plankton, you know, it's this wide mouth. It's this opening of the mouth is literally kind of what the energy is. So it's like, I think that's really interesting. The communication of like opening the mouth, and then number 12 to open the throat, like to open the power, you know, you're basically opening the power of the throat chakra. So speaking, yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the final element before the gentle tornado of all the drums coming to you, or even one at a time moving on from there, but you were conscious, the end of the consciously summoning thing is the fire energy, raising energy, burning away negative emotions and baggage. There's an element to focusing on a task that is partly putting aside other things. You leave your baggage at the door when you go into work, that kind of thing. It's like the point here is not to trauma dump on the audience. The point is to offer information that is of benefit to them. I mean, it's like what separates a teacher from just someone, anybody talking about anything, their personal problems on stage, you know, even a comedian that does that, they do it to make the audience laugh. And if they're not making the audience laugh, they're just trauma dumping, as the kids say. So you do want that. You want that focus. There's two elements to it. One is to actually burn away your own baggage so that you can focus. And the other is to have that out of the way so the audience can learn what is most useful to them. I don't know if I'm just saying the same thing twice or if you see a difference there, or if anything I've said resonates at all. Yeah, go ahead.
I think it's the burning the baggage inside, but also in the audience. And then also, to me, what's coming up is it's almost like creating this clear channel. Like at this point, I've stepped into channeling, and wow, this is really making sense right now, where the conscious mind has completely gone after this because now I'm channeling something, which I do channel. It's something newer to me, and it is sometimes I'm just like, I'm gone, totally gone, and I'm speaking stuff that's just beautiful wisdom teachings, these kinds of things where I just totally go unconscious and it's flowing through me.
Nice.
So I think that's kind of, it's like almost as if I'm channeling one of this class.
Yeah. And it might be exactly that. If that experience of channeling is what it feels like to you in the dream at this moment of summoning that drum and putting that into practice consciously, let me get into and we call it, you know, there's a flow state, in the zone for athletes. There's a lot of different ways to describe this idea of it's felt like my body was moving on its own and I was a passive observer, even though I was doing it, but I wasn't. I almost get a quasi dissociative out of body, but in body experience. There's like a physical sensation that goes along with it too. I've had a couple of those and they're amazing and I can't explain them and I can't trigger them. I just kind of roll with it. And it's interesting that you summon these things consciously, specifically in this particular order. And then once you kind of surrender to the process in a way, once you've set yourself up for success, you've put yourself into the right frame of mind, you've approached things properly, then the rest of them, it doesn't matter the order anymore. They all come to you. So you've opened yourself up to the entire, it's almost like, this was the, from the beginning of saying, I need to open myself to my own internal understanding, my unconscious, all the knowledge I've acquired and skills to practically implement this stuff. And then you get down to that burning away baggage to get into the flow state and bam, all the drums, everything you need, all the tools you need come to you. And there's a bit of a tornado of drums metaphor to knowledge in our brain in that way. And not just knowledge, wisdom, you know, any kind of knowing, understanding, whatever. It's all there, but we have to access it. So in a way, it swirls all around us, and it isn't in any particular location. It's everywhere, all at once. So the gentle tornado of drums is a fantastic imagery. And you know, first we, so if we look at a process oriented type of thing, we look at this swirl of information that's all around us, but really it's all in us and it all comes to you. It comes into the drum. It's, and you put these drums in your hands, like the tools are in my hands. And I'm playing the song unique to that drum, to communicate that message. Where was I going with that? Float and merge. And it's, and you used the, I think originally in your, description, you said all, they all integrate. And that's a fascinating thing. And if we go to like the Jungian sense, we have to integrate our shadows so that we don't have our dark side expressing itself unconsciously in ways we do not control. You know, the passive person being aggressive versus assertive, you know, that's the, I could say the ideal expression or great, example of integrating the shadow is going from, you know, I'm too passive and sometimes I snap and I'm very aggressive. Well, let's just be assertive. Let's not be passive. Let's not be aggressive. Long story short. Where am I going with that? You use that term integrate. So you're actually, the great thing too, is that when we integrate a lot of different discrete topics or ideas, they become more than the sum of their parts. They become true knowledge or wisdom. So once you've integrated all these different drums, that's when the teacher spirit, the observer, the judge says, that's how you do it. You're ready. Yeah. And so I would say, if it makes sense to you, this is, you're considering a new venture in life, which we always go, God, am I up to this task? This is, I've never done this before. It's, it could all go wrong. This could be a horrible mistake. I could be embarrassed. It could fail financially, but all the different things. And so you have this dream roughly, and it can be, thinking about it ahead of time, or you can have a specific experience. Like, I've already started teaching and it didn't go so well the first day. Let me double check if this is a good idea or not. So, but it sounds like this might be, something that's coming up in the future. So you're thinking ahead.
I've been teaching and it's been going really well, but I think there's like a next, it's, kind of going to the next level, if that makes sense. You know,
yeah.
I think there's what you said, the integration piece, at the end there was, to me, it's almost like this, the word that came up was like emergence, like there's an emerging property where it's like all of this energy and like what you said with ideas and topics. And it's kind of like the, every practitioner has their own way of practice these things. So it's like all these other topics that I research or look into, it's like the integration of all the things that I am into this practice is like emerging into totally unique.
Yeah.
Really cool perspective.
That's a great way to say it too. Like this emergent property that just kind of happens when two things or more come together and create something new in a way that has features of both, but more. Yeah. That's great too. So yeah, that's where I'm going with this, this idea of the story arc being, let's look at the next level I'm trying to achieve. Let me reflect on whether I feel up to this task. What's my honest self-assessment of how likely this is to succeed because of me? Like, can I do this? And I think through the course of this dream, you looked at so many different aspects of the process, realistically appraised your own skill, understanding, and abilities in terms of communication, and said, you know, I think I'm going to be okay. I think I'm going to go ahead with this. And you haven't, since that dream, probably haven't seriously considered canceling anything. Like, you know, you're...
Oh, not at all.
Yeah.
Felt very more drawn or like motivated. Yeah.
Yeah. Woke up from it like, this is good. I'm on the... You have that visceral sense of I'm on the right path, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Well, what do you think? Did we come up with something relevant and interesting and possibly true?
Yeah, you know what I think is there's one, thank you. There's a lot of insights here that I'm going to reflect on from your perspective.
That's probably the best part of these. You're not going to
also think.
Go ahead. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. And then I think this specific sequence, as we were talking about it, like the 31, 8, 12, 23, like the specific sequence, just what popped in my mind as you were going through it again was like, oh, this is like the sequence I can use in like waking life to begin my channeling process. Like,
hey, yeah,
let's try that.
It might even, what just occurred to me right now is like, you might even be able to use that specifically in classes as an opening, right, as an opening ceremony. The first 5 minutes, you could even run them through a visualization of your dream itself of like, here's what we're going to do first. We're going to play this drum. Then we're going to play this one and see if you, and you might actually be able to help them drop into that kind of a state too. We never even talked about your hypnosis thing too. This could be with chanting, with drumming. You could be doing a facilitative hypnotic process with the audience itself to get them in a state of mind to be most receptive to what's going to follow. I don't know how any of that works, but just an idea.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love that. Yeah, I think this is a big one. This is a dream I'll definitely be reflecting on for a little while, for sure.
It does. It feels really good. And I appreciate you being, very detailed and having the ability to kind of tease out some of these things too. Not everyone's has that too. Like, I think I've noticed in the past that if some guests rely on me too much, they're not going to get good answers. It's got to be that collaborative process. You got to kind of meet me halfway in a way. I mean, it's just suggestions and they feel right or they don't. And when you have an inspired thought, throw it out there fearlessly. So I think we get the best answers when we're actually able to build it. You take that bucket of Legos and make a big castle together. And I think we're wrapping up just about the right time. This guy's going to start barking. Quiet. Wait.
Yeah.
Give me 2 minutes. 2 minutes. Hold on. peanut butter lets me know when the episode's over.
Oh, I love that. That's right? Amazing.
He does.
That's so cool.
Come here, buddy.
Yeah,
I'm gonna try and pick him up just so he doesn't. Where are you going? Come here. Okay, he'll stop barking temporarily if I hold him, and then we'll take you outside. Okay. All right. Well, let's do this. Let's wrap it up and do the outro. So I'll just say to all the folks watching, this has been our friend Thomas Worm from Olympia, Washington. He is author of 7 Ways to Medicine, available on Amazon, and master practitioner of hypnosis and mental and emotional release. And I didn't mention, you can, of course, links are in the description. You can find him at mountainmindtricks.com. Again, link in the description and the book link. For my part, would you kindly like, share, subscribe, smash that like button on your way out. Tell your friends, always need more volunteer dreamers. 17 currently available works of historical dream literature available on Amazon. The most recent, The Fabric of Dreams by Catherine Taylor Craig. I say this like every day and I can't remember. All this and more at BenjaminTheDreamWizard.com, including downloadable MP3 versions of this very podcast. Also, if you'd head on over to BenjaminTheDreamWizard.locals.com, attached to my Rumble account, and become, it's free to join, and you can just be hang out in the community there and share your dreams with me. That's enough shilling out of me. Thomas, thank you for being here. Fascinating dream. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And what amazing insights we had today. Appreciate it.
Wonderful. Always happy to help. That makes me happy. It does. And I'll just say to everybody out there, thanks for listening.